Good morning and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists.
Good morning again. And we're gathered today to commemorate the life, the teachings of Robert Crosby. We remember him, or we think of him, as one who kept the link unbroken between man and the masters. His selfless service is why this exists today, this lodge, more so than even the building, are these ideas, that these are the property of mankind. So who was this Mr. Robert Crosby? How did he come to be involved in theosophy? Well, much like all of us, he was born in Montreal, Canada. His family was involved with the Hudson Bay Trading Company, both his father and mother. And he was, it was said that his mother, who were Scottish and father Scottish, was gifted with second sight, but she rarely used it. But also, all the biographies say this, that she was kind, she was selfless, and she was in service to all that came in her path. So this was the atmosphere, or the foundation of family life, of association. When he was 16, his introduction into religion was that of his parents. They were Presbyterian. And he was at 16 was asked to join the communion of the community. Well, communion was the acceptance and the knowing of that God, of God, or what we come to think of it. And he had considered this himself. And he didn't think he was worthy to have this close association. But when he was asked to join the communion, he was taken aside by the priest, and he was told that, well, you don't have to be there yet. You'll get there. Don't worry. It's just a formality. And this basically shocked him to the core. He was too much of a sincere human being to be put off by someone's understanding of religious background. So he began questioning at this point. And this was the foundation of how he approached everything from here on out, because he was therefore in pursuit of spirit, of the truth, of knowledge. And he had other experiences in his life. He was married at a young age, was a professional, he was a businessman, he owned a shoe company with a partner. They lived in Montreal. He got married, fact to his partner's daughter, but because of circumstances, she was sick, and she did die, and this whole process wanted him to find the answer. So we all know what was prevalent during this time, spiritualism. So he, like many others, he investigated it. And he came across hypnotism and mesmerism and all the things that are prevalent today. But he was able to discern that these were fruitless adventures. And that would, in fact, lead down the wrong path. And he attributes that in his biography, like he was given help. He was given guidance or protection. So, he owned this factory, but then they decided, they sold it, and he moved to Boston. Now, Boston, there was a, spiritualism was very prevalent there also. About in 1896 or so, he was told by his partner of this theosophy, and they were meeting somewhere in Boston, and he was curious, and he went, and he said that the first few moments he sat there, even though it wasn't a very formal meeting, he knew right away that this is what he was looking for. So from that day forth, he became dedicated to theosophy. Now, this path that he had found himself on led in many directions, because HPB died in 91, the judge died in 96. And he was like 50, in his 50s. And as soon as they died, especially when Judge died and left the scene, others got keys to his belongings. And they went through all his papers, and they said that there has to be a successor. We can't go on without a leader. So this is the beginning of the fragmentation of the Theosophical movement. It began to fall apart. And Mr. Crosby was there. But he trusted those that had been in this with him, the other theosophers. But the problem began to be personalities. So what happened after this, that these personalities grew stronger, and but his desire was to help the movement. So he supported this progression until at one point he became involved with Tingley and her movement in California, where he had to give up all his belongings to join that community. And he became part of it. It was a theosophical community. But it became evident it was a cult of personality. And it wasn't about theosophy. And he confronted Tingley and said exactly what he had come to understand what was going on there, and said that he was leaving. Much to her dismay. But he had to start anew. He said this was not going in the right direction. So he had developed an association with other theosophists and began to formulate what we presently know as the United Lodge of Theosophists. He formulated not an organization, but an association of students, like-minded, and devoted to the same ideals and the same basis for understanding. In 1909, he formed the United Lodge of Theosophists, which it was 21 years after the death of the judge. He kept that link unbroken. There was always someone on the scene. And this is the hidden side of Mr. Cosby, one which we don't talk about. But he says that he had a link, that link was not unbroken, that he had communication with HPB and Judge after their passing. Now, this is not mentioned and talked about because it would be not understood and poo-pooed. But if one comes to understand these teachings, is that there is a long lineage of beings who keep these ideas alive. And H.P. Blavatsky, William Q. Judge, and Robert Crosby are three selfless students who sacrificed their life to keep these ideas alive and before the world. He was 70 years old when he died. And that he died quietly. No fanfare. He died. And he wrote a few things, but we found it quite interesting. And he wrote several books. He finished most of William Q. Judge's endeavors that were incomplete, like the notes on the Bhagavad Gita. He finished them. Answers to questions on the ocean. He wrote a little pamphlet called "Because," for children who ask why. He did remarry again, and at the age of 51, started another family, and had two children. And this was in that time when the beginnings of the United Lodge of Theosophists. So there was music in these rooms. As he said that we should develop a song or songs for the people, and we are the people. So it's something that we've always heard and always had in our imagination, that the song of this philosophy should be sung in our heart, and that Robert Crosby shows us through selfless effort how we can benefit others, because we all want to help. So how can we help the best way we can? Well, by example, they show us. So we probably could ramble on for quite a while. But as Mr. Judge said after their first meeting with Mr. Cosby, he was saying good night, and he says, and as Crosby was walking out the door, Mr. Judge, hey Crosby, I have you on my list. And Mr. Crosby's biography, he says, at that moment, when I heard this, like a veil was lifted, and a connection was made that was unbroken for the remainder of my life. So, theosophy deals with the unseen world as much as it deals with the, that which we see. So, as a example of how we can be, we have the friendly philosopher. We can read. We have the notes so you can read. His articles that he has written. But he, like Mr. Judge, in fact, Mr. Judge says, the main time people ask him a question, he goes, go to Mr. Crosby. He acts and thinks as I do. So we know there was a knowing there, beyond which was spoken. And this, so we in our imagination think of the Hindu religion, the Trimurti, the Godhead, the three, the creator, the sustainer, and the rejuvenator. HPB, William Q. Judge.
Theosophy is in the world to present the means by which each one can acquire knowledge for himself. Its study and application call for the judgment and discrimination latent in the man himself. We must seek to give aid to all in search of truth. Our value and aid in this great work will be just what we make them by our motive, our judgment, our conduct. The heartfelt desire that others may benefit from our lives will be felt by those open, it matters little how few, that they may be the means of awakening many others. It is the effort and the sacrifice that bring the ultimate results. But in our zeal, it is well to consider what the masters have done and do year after year, age after age. They do what they can, when they can, and as they can, in accordance with cyclic law. They conserve the knowledge gained and wait. Knowing this and doing thus, there can be no room in us for doubt or discouragement. Theosophy is for those who want it. We are to hold, wait, and work for those few earnest souls who will grasp the plan and further the cause. In the work we have undertaken together, it matters not whether we fail or succeed. Our purpose has been and will be that the work shall go on. It is then to the teachings that attention has to be called, not to ourselves, who are only handling them on as best we can. ULT, the United Lodge of Theosophists, is a name given to certain principles and ideas. Those who associate themselves with those principles and ideas are attracted and bound by them only. The basis of successful work is unity. This is an age of transition, and our work is to hark back to those first principles, promulgate and sustain them the best we can, so that they shall be ready for those who need them, drawing our inspiration from the message and the messengers. The course of ULT will be what its associates make it, no more and no less. Its basis for union is purposefully left undefined from the exoteric, the personal point of view, in order to make more prominent the true and lasting basis for unity among all who call themselves theosophists. We are all links in the great chain of the theosophical movement. What affects one affects all, and in degree. Everyone who endeavors to help others in any real way puts himself in the position where he must take the reactions the karma of the parent Theosophical Society is that of HPB and Mr. Judge, known by them beforehand in a general way. It is also our karma and that of all other theosophists. We and all other true students are linked with the Great Lodge by aspiration, by service, by following the Master's program as nearly as we know.
Our reading from the writing of H.P. Blavatsky. The wisdom religion is the inheritance of all the nations the world over. Theosophy is as old as the world in its teachings and ethics, if not in name. Its aims are several, but the most important of all are those which are likely to lead to the relief of human suffering under any or every form, moral as well as physical. And we believe the former to be far more important than the latter. Theosophy has to inculcate ethics. It has to purify the soul. If it would relieve the physical body, whose ailments, save cases of accidents, are all hereditary. It is not by studying occultism that one can ever reach the true goal, that of helping suffering mankind. As mankind is essentially of one and the same essence, and that essence is one, infinite, uncreate, and eternal, whether we call it God or nature, nothing, therefore, can affect one nation or one man without affecting all other nations and all other men. This is as certain and as obvious as that a stone thrown into a pond will sooner or later set in motion every single drop of water therein. It is an occult law that no man can rise superior to his individual failings without lifting, be it ever so little, the whole body of which he is an integral part. In the same way, no one can sin nor suffer the effect of sin alone. All pain and suffering are results of want of harmony, and the one terrible and only cause of the disturbance of harmony is selfishness in one form or another. Hence, karma gives back to every man the actual consequences of his own actions, without any regard to their moral character. But since he receives his due for all, it is obvious that he will be made to atone for all sufferings which he has caused, just as he will reap in joy and gladness the fruits of all the happiness and harmony he had helped to produce. The masters require only that each shall do his best, and above all, that each shall strive in reality to feel themselves one with his fellow workers. It is not a dull agreement on intellectual questions or an impossible unanimity as to all details of work that is needed, but a true, hearty, earnest devotion to our cause which will lead each to help his brother to the utmost of his power to work for that cause. Whether or not we agree as to the exact method of carrying on that work, the only man who is absolutely wrong in his methods is the one does nothing. Make men feel and recognize in their innermost hearts what is their real, true duty to all men, and every abuse of power, every iniquitous law in the national policy based on human, social, or political selfishness will disappear of itself.
From the writings of William G. Judge. How man has come to be complex being that he is, and why, are questions that neither science nor religion makes conclusive answer to. This immortal thinker, having such vast powers and possibilities, all his because of his intimate connection with every secret part of nature from which he has been built up, stands at the top of an immense and silent evolution. He asks why nature exists, what the drama of life has for its aim, how that aim may be attained. But science and religion both fail to give a reasonable reply. Science does not pretend to be able to give the solution, saying that the examination of things as they are is enough of a task. Religion offers an explanation of both illogical and unmeaning and unacceptable, but to the bigot, as it requires us to consider the whole of nature as a mystery and to seek for the meaning and purpose of life with all its sorrow and the pleasure of God who cannot be found out. What then is the universe for? And for what final purpose is man the immortal thinker here in evolution? It is all for the experience and emancipation of the soul, for the purpose of raising the entire mass of manifested matter up to the stature, nature, and dignity of conscious godhood. The great aim is to reach self-consciousness, not through a race or a tribe or some favored nation, but by and through the perfecting, after transformation, of the whole mass of matter, as well as what we now call soul. Nothing is or is to be left out. The aim for present man is his initiation into complete knowledge, and for the other kingdoms below, that they may be raised up gradually from stage to stage to be in time initiated also. This is evolution carried to its highest power. It is a magnificent prospect. It makes of man a god and gives to every part of nature the possibility of being one day the same. There is strength and nobility in it, for by this no man is dwarfed and belittled, for no one is so originally sinful that he cannot rise above all sin. Treated from the materialistic position of science, evolution takes in but half of life, while the religious conception of it is a mixture of nonsense and fear. Present religions keep the element of fear, and at the same time imagine that an almighty being can think of no other earth but this and has to govern this one very imperfectly. That the old theosophical view makes the universe as vast, complete, and perfect whole. The great problems of life, why we are here, why we suffer, and where may justice be found, press upon us. It is life and its sorrows that destroy our peace, and every human heart wants to know the reason for it. We must therefore offer theories that will give the answer. And these theories are the great doctrines of karma and reincarnation. There is a mysterious power in these doctrines, which at last forces them upon the belief of those who take them up for study. It is due to the fact that the ego is itself the experiencer of rebirth and karma, that has within a clear recollection of both, and rejoices, as it were, when it finds the lower mind taking them up for study.
This reading is from the writings of Robert Crosby. Where shall we find the true foundation for a changed civilization that all men and women can see and stand on? It is not philosophies, nor religions, nor political panaceas that are needed, but knowledge and wider scope of vision than the vicissitudes of one short physical life. The knowledge that is greater than all the forms of religion, even invented, is the knowledge of the very nature of man himself, for himself, and in himself. For we are not here as things apart. We are here because of one great sustaining cause, infinite and omnipresent, nor separate from us, nor from any other being. It is the same in all beings above the human and in all beings below the human. The very root of our natures, the very man himself. It is the source of all powers and of all action, whether good or evil. Then everything that is done, it is the same in all beings, I repeat, above the human and in all beings below the human. The very root of our nature is the very man himself. It is the source of all powers and of all actions, whether good or evil. Then everything that is done by beings affects all beings. And all that it has been caused by beings, each one affected according to his share in the cause. What the past has been, we are experiencing now. Our lives now being but repetitions of lives that preceded then. What the future will be, we're making now. We're going to have a league of humanity only when the ancient truths of the wisdom religion are once more perceived. When there is one purpose and one teaching. Its truths are self-evident. Not to be accepted because written in some book, nor because they are the data of some particular church. They're the only truth worth considering because in the use of them, they prove themselves true. And truth, as we ought to know, always explains. When we have the explanation, we have the truth. Each one has to make his own verifications of the truth. But the fact remains that there is truth and it has always existed. It has come to us from beings higher than we, because they turned their faces in the right direction and pursued the course pointed out to them.
So here we are again at the end of a couple of cycles. It's the end of the winter cycle for the work effort here in Philadelphia. It is also the centennial, the 100-year cycle or observation of the passing of Mr. Crosby from this plane. And we're mesmerized after listening to the introductory biographical statement and the various readings that were chosen for celebration today, that it was in 10 short years that a middle-aged or perhaps an elderly man in that context all those years ago worked so hard and had such fruitful efforts, and here we are today. Today's title, The United Lodge of Theosophists, Its Mission and Its Future, is rooted in everything we've heard this morning and everything we've been reminded. The biography of the consummate student of the philosophy and the founder of ULT, a soul who would be very probably embarrassed by the public celebration and the public scrutiny of his personality and personal life today. We've been reminded of Blavatsky as a beacon light for all ages, tracing the path from the true founders, the great ones who came so far long ago in the past. Judge is a promulgator of that message that she brought together in a bouquet of ideas. But Crosby in particular, as an inspiration for his individual efforts at what it is to be a seeker of truth, what it is to attempt to lead the life, and what it is to courageously, despite lack of financial resources, lack of general support, courageously to step forward and work for the good of all. So today we're here together to realize, to make real, that ULT is only a means, is only a reflection of the greater theosophical movement. And ULT in Philadelphia, will only be, in the future, will only have as its mission what associates make for it. The moment is now. Our devotion is private, it's independent, it's individual, but it is one of unity, universal brotherhood, one of study, the study of the lower self, the study of the philosophy, the study of life in general, and work, service, the attempt to keep a center alive for the good of anyone that wants to come walking through that door in their own individual pursuit of truth and comforting spirituality. So this is an effort of a timeless and a cyclic theosophical movement. Might be the end of the winter season, might be the end of a 100-year cycle for Crosby. But in 1909, when ULT was established, it was actually a renewed effort to come to the straight line of theosophy, to bring pure motives and courageous wisdom to the practice of theosophy, and to plant seeds for each of the cycles to come, 1975, 2075, 2175, because we know that the end 25 years of every century are very, very potent if only the truth is available for any seeker of truth. So it's our mutual and charitable efforts, when right, to be kept right, when wrong, to be put right, but always communally to hold the mission of everything is for the greater good, that all service is for all entities in evolution, the human state, the animal state, the vegetable state, the mineral state, the veritable globe itself. Everything is one, everything is spiritual, and the service that we can do to provide people with the information about that mission becomes self-fulfilled and self-devised, and it blooms as we bring our hearts to the very task. So it's the principles and the propositions of the philosophy of theosophy that students study so that they can offer some information about them to others who are also seeking. It is the principles and the propositions that will impress all of life in all forms and all entities and uplift the entire mass. So wherever you find work for the cause. And there's a line in the Declaration of ULT that the true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. That is because where individuals study alone, where study groups form informally or periodically to look at a particular aspect of ideas or principles, wherever a study group blooms into a formal lodge, wherever there are virtual study groups using podcasts, folks working in isolation perhaps, somewhere around the world, studying on the internet, exchanging emails on the internet, these are all many access points to one path. The access points are vital, they're needed, they're magnetic, they will attract those who want to study, who want to comprehend and want to serve. But the path itself, that higher plane of being, the truth, where there's no separation, there's no kaleidoscope of physicality, there's only universality. That true essence behind and in and through the human condition, and behind and through and in all of the entities that express it, that theosophical truth of oneness, of universality, makes theosophy a living power in life. If only we as independent thinkers rededicate ourselves day by day, maybe year by year in a cycle like this morning, but we rededicate ourselves to study the collations that Judge and Blavatsky and Crosby worked to gift to the public around the world, to examine critically the three original objects. You can find them on our little periodical pamphlet, to create the nucleus of universal brotherhood. It's up to the associate to create the nucleus. To examine and explore comparative religions, philosophy, and science. To study the metaphysical realities of the universe and of man. We study, we learn, we discuss the three fundamental propositions, deity, law, and evolution in a full sense of the term of evolution. And we seek that self-fulfilling prophecy that is the birthright of each and all, of every single human being who comes through those front doors, or turns on a podcast someplace in the world, or who looks at an internet site and says, wow, let me contact that lodge and ask this question. This is a free and open, substantial birthright for every single human being. So that's the mission. That's the effort. Altruism is both an ideal and is a real, an inclusive effort in all ways imaginable. Anytime we find ourselves falling into a little pit of what feels like isolation, or judgmentalism, or some kind of divisive feeling, we know that we're off the path. We know that we're off the track. And because we have a study group in common here in Philadelphia, we're very, very, very fortunate. Those who can avail themselves of coming together to study together, to be companions to each other on the path, to listen, to see, gee, if that does sound right, that is truly ringing true with the philosophy. Where, I just heard a statement and it seems it's a little bit off center. Maybe I should offer an idea to fine tune that line of thinking and bring it back in. That is our cause, that's our purpose, and in the moment that we can pull that off, where we figure out, are we in line or out of line with the theosophical movement as it was revived by Blavatsky, Judge, and then Crosby. In that moment, as we transmute thought and we start to think, are we sidetracked? Am I working toward a nucleus of workers that are going to create the center. As we do that, we transmit and transmute lower nature and we raise it. We aspire to the spiritual font of the masters that stand behind the Theosophical movement and who frankly help to sustain the study of individuals at all avenues, all access points to the philosophy. But here we are in Philadelphia, blooming where we're planted, hopefully blooming without pride or prejudice or personality, dedicated to the founders, dedicated to the masters working through Blavatsky and Judge, dedicated to following in the footsteps of Mr. Crosby, the consummate student, someone who studied the principles, studied the ethics, tried to make them as practical and as applicable as possible to daily life. And we know that in that way, we're preparing the substance for the future, for future cycles. We're assisting in the preservation of the body of the philosophy in its purest line as established in the late 19th century. We make every sincere effort to promulgate, to publicize the philosophy in its pure form. We don't interpret. We're not spin masters. We're not re-editing anything. We're making every attempt to keep the line as true and pure as possible. And we provide assistance as guides on the side, the way that Mr. Crosby showed. There is not one, there is no one here that's a sage on the stage. We are students, one and all. We are equals, one and all. We are companions, one and all. Our commonality is the dedication and the rededication to establishing the cycles of holding out, waiting as best we can through thick and thin, and then working to the utmost that we can do. It's a humble devotion because it's thoughtful and mindful for others. It's duty fulfilled, readying ourselves to be the guide to the few that might sincerely understand what it is to study and fit themselves by a variety of efforts to be the better able to help and teach others. So there's magic in the moment. The mission is in the moment. The future is right now in the moment, the way associates and seekers of truth will make it. There's a collective consciousness, a oneness that we build, we sustain, and which sustains us, to be perfectly honest. We're a link in a chain of one-pointedness, if you will. Unity, study, and work. Mr. Crosby's mission in 1909 is as pure and as time-empowering, if you will, as it was 1909, 2019. It is timeless, it is eternal, it is cyclical, the future is now. The Theosophical movement is an invitation in the closing lines of the Bhagavad Gita, which we will study this summer. We hear, act as seemeth best to thee. And therein lies the magic. Therein lies the spiritual truth that intuitively each of us knows what it is we can best do to our best effort to serve. And in that process, there's no fear of abridgment, no limitation of individual judgment. There's no fear that the effort will ever be stopped because all of this effort is around the world, imbued by individual efforts of heart and mind and soul. And it's absolutely ongoing. We've allotted some time this morning so that you can enjoy some fellowship among folks who may be new to the movement, may be new to the building, and returning associates who work behind the scenes, work in front of the scenes. But all of the services here are sustained by voluntary contributions of time, service, and effort, whether a visitor is aware of that effort or not. They still enjoy the fruits of the labor of those who associate with the cause. Have a great day.